you made the decision to have a courageous opinion on what was happening in humanity.
When did it become brave for a journalist to fact check? In what dystopian universe is it brave to say we should stop killing children? In any other context, this is not considered brave. It is considered common sense. And that is what baffles. I am not brave. I am just consistent. Hello, thanks for hanging out with the Antoinettes. It is the show where two smart asses tackle a new problem each week. Nothing's off the table. We won't always break bread. We try and play nice. Sometimes.
The Antoinettes love a bit of tension. We don't shy away from tough topics. We don't always agree. It does get challenging. And we do find a really beautiful way to stress test. Or just get stressed. or to test our friendship in stress.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
under
great.
Duress.
Yeah, under duress, extreme duress. Yeah.
I do love that.
Yeah.
I do also love introducing you each week, Azur Antoinette, because you are full of surprises, full of talent. You're a wordsmith, a poet who doesn't like to rhyme, a disability advocate, a stepmom of six, and you hate people touching or commenting on your hair.
Yeah, I could deal with the comments. It's just with the comments comes an outstretched hand and the touching, I get really nervous. And how to describe a problem like, I mean, my co-host, Antoinette Latouf. She's who she says she is, never diverts, and she does what she says she's going to do, and also is really, really committed to the art and the religion of a completed to-do list, which is something that I am personally coming to really, really enjoy. She's an author, a columnist, and AFR's 100 Women of Influence.
I may have that title, but I still can't influence you to respond to an email or to tick off a to-do list in a Google Sheet.
Yeah, no.
So that is something I'm still working on. I don't feel I've achieved enough until I get you to do that. But together, we are the Antoinettes. Welcome to the shit show. Welcome to the bin fire. Welcome to the trash.
Rubbish adjacent.
Well, you say trash. You don't say bin here, do you?
I don't say bin. I don't bin. Mm-mm. No, we don't have bins.
You have trash.
We have trash. Yep.
Welcome to heaps the trash
of it. Fire. Welcome to the trash.
You have heaps of trash.
We have so much of the trash.
In the US.
In the United States. How are you, Name Twin?
I'm good. I'm fine. Why are you looking at me like that?
I mean, I love to tell you that your gratitude journal's empty and you don't like joy, but I am joking. I do. There have been some moments where I've seen you somewhat grateful and you are adjacent to joy. And I love that. And jokes and devil spawn aside, I'm actually asking though, you do not.
If I'm going to be honest, I feel confused and conflicted. And I do feel like I'm living in an alternate universe. I was reading a Guardian column recently, and something really stuck out to me. And it said, watching what's happening in Gaza feels almost too painful to bear sometimes. And I get that. The pain is unbearable. But it is important that none of us look away. And I'm torn because, to be honest, Azur, I've started to look away to try and preserve my mental health, maybe preserve my stamina. And sometimes it's because I'm sad, sometimes I'm furious, sometimes I'm scared, if I'm going to be completely frank, because speaking up about Gaza has cost me. You know, in the past few months, so many horrifically unprecedented things have happened. And so I oscillate between this deep sadness to rage, to confusion about how these atrocities continue, live streamed on our phones, and then we somehow need to find a way to go on or to find justifications as to why it needs to go on, you know, why abhorrent violence is the only answer. And I don't know if the world can or should recover from it. Like, I don't know. I just don't think the world should recover from it. And I'm not sure if you were just after I'm good, thanks, and you, because I've just verbally and emotionally unloaded on you.
Even though we are known for, you know, our fast retorts.
Sometimes you've got to slow down.
Yeah, you have to, because it is difficult. It is difficult to be living in a time where we are working so furiously to find some joy whilst things are breaking down. I find myself without language around what the world has witnessed and what has taken place since October 7th in Gaza. my heart breaks on a level that I don't even know that I could put into language. It is fair for me to assess, based on your answer, that the world has been and is showing a very awful truth, a very awful consistent truth. It's been going on so readily that no matter where you are, you can't claim to not know or haven't seen it. It does beg the question, can we be the same again? Can we be the people we were before we knew? Can we come back from that? So tell me a little bit more about kind of where you are right now.
Let's talk from October 7th. Hamas's brutal attack in the south of Israel, the deadliest since Israel's founding and since the Holocaust. More than 1,200 people killed, Israelis killed, mainly innocent civilians. It is horrific. It has been condemned and should be condemned in every corner by all our leaders, by all of us in every language. Also an acknowledgement that more than 100 hostages remain, and there is so much. I can only imagine the amount of anguish over whether they're even alive and the torture that their parents and families and partners are going through. But in response to that, there have been more than 170 days of the most savage and most unfathomable brutality, and it's live streamed on our phones. It has no end in sight. More than 31,000 Palestinians are killed, overwhelmingly children and women. And at the same time, Islamophobia and anti-Arab hate and anti-Semitism have skyrocketed. For the first time, many people who've previously shown little or no interest in the Middle East are now realizing, okay, this did not start on October 7. This has been a human rights atrocity pressure cooker for decades that the West has given a thumbs up to, allowing Palestinians to live in what many refer to as open-air prisons. But for the first time, we have seen the brutality, the scale of the brutality, the scale of the ongoing human rights atrocities, the complicity in Western governments, the verbal and semantic gymnastics Western media does to try and downplay or justify it. And so many more people are galvanized and outraged. It continues with no end in sight. You cannot look away from the magnitude and the scale, of the human rights devastation and the deliberate nature of it.
Absolutely.
We have never seen in modern times such rapid and deliberate starvation of the masses, ever.
Yeah.
This is not due to a lack of, you know, a situation of poverty in which they just can't, they don't have food, deliberately stopping people from getting all the aid and the food that is being directed to them. We are complicit. Our governments are complicit. But when a so-called democratic leader, who really is just a right-wing extremist, Benjamin Netanyahu, does it's like, well, you know, there really wasn't another way and this has to happen. And it's given the green light and the thumbs up by so-called civilized nations.
So I'm going to jump in and I'm going to stop you. So why is there so much pressure? Why is there so much fixation and heavy attention on what the Israeli community is doing versus, you know, the Uyghurs in China or Ukrainians in Russia? Like, why is there no pressure there? Why is there such a draw on this particular space at this moment?
Yeah, look, and I think that's a really important point to raise. And people will say, you know, it's anti-Semitic just by nature of the fact that this is the only Jewish state. Hmm. And there are protests, mass protests every weekend all around the world.
Yep.
There is all this movement. There is all this condemnation of Netanyahu and IDF. And we're not doing it to Putin. And how come we weren't so outraged? Because other marginalized and oppressed groups who are treated abhorrently, like the Uyghurs in China or the Rohingyas or the Ukrainians. And to that, there are a few ways to respond to that. One is the scale of the devastation and deaths.
Yeah.
They are unprecedented in what's happening in Gaza. Secondly is the US and the UK and Australia don't refer to China or Russia as their dear friend.
Mm.
They apply economic sanctions. They condemn. We look at Russia and we look at Putin as an autocratic psychopath. We hardly look at China as a bastion of human rights and fairness.
Mm.
Yet somehow Israel is put forward as a democracy. Well, it ain't really a democracy. It's an ethnocracy because Jewish rights and quality of life are different to Arab rights and quality of life, which are also like Arab Israelis, which are also different, far, far different to the inhumane conditions that Palestinians live in.
Yeah.
And so when we are providing military, political, financial aid to the aggressor without condemnation, without economic sanctions, then they are different and the scale of the devastation is different. Then they're not comparable. And I think that is a really important, and I think it's a bit of a cop-out to be like, well, where were you when the Chinese were doing this?
Sure.
What we weren't doing is lighting the opera house in the Chinese flag.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
My question today is, will the world ever be the same again because the veil's lifted on us as Western democracies, the land of the free and the righteous, as though we have a claim to some moral superiority over people in the Middle East, namely Arabs in the Middle East? And I think it has been shown, and more clearly than ever before, that no, we do not. That is what I'm struggling to deal with on a daily basis and struggling to think about how I'm going to continue, but also how the world can ever recover from this.
Do I think we can be the same? Do I wonder how we can witness it and do nothing? Do I wonder how hate groups have gotten more fuel and more fire? My very, very simple answer is, I guess, multi-pronged.
Well, that's not a simple answer then.
Thank you so much for you pointing out the cinch. She's the best. I love the fact checking. It's good. But I do like that you research and pay attention to everything. Am I surprised? No. Do I believe that we can go back or return? There's nothing to return to. This is who we are. Do I think that it is heinous and a massive injustice? Yes, I do. Am I surprised at the amount and the fuel and fervor that anti-hate groups are picking up in this space? No, I'm not. Do I know how you're supposed to continue? I have no idea. The concept that a foremost and leading journalist here in this country has been displaced because you made the decision to have a courageous opinion on what was happening in humanity?
Well, I'm going to pull you up on that word courageous. I have been called courageous and brave by so many different people.
Yeah.
What is so screwed up about this scenario is, when did it become brave for a journalist to fact check? In what dystopian universe is it brave to say we should stop killing children? How is it brave to say, hey, IDF, stop targeting journalists in Gaza and stop killing them? You've killed more than 100. In any other context, this is not considered brave. It is considered common sense. And that is what baffles. I am not brave. I am just consistent.
What I'll correct you on was, I wasn't calling what you said about the unrest and the atrocities happening brave. I called you brave because of how many people threatened to take you out and then did. And you kept going. They were coming at you nonstop. Trolls, name trolls, people with private profiles, public profiles, newspaper outlets, and they kept going. The courage I see in you is that you're even sitting here talking to me right now, which really also, to your point, shouldn't be lauded.
No.
The fact that we're sitting here having a conversation about this shouldn't be like, oh, they're really rogue. We're not fucking rogue.
No.
Because you believe in civility.
Yeah.
And civil rights.
I think what this has really shown is that our leaders here in Australia, and very much so in the US, have their grubby hands all over this. This reeks of sort of our institutions of power absolutely complicit in this ongoing, I'm not going to say, I hate calling it a conflict, this genocide, this slaughter. And yet even openly talking about how wrong our complicity is makes you a target. How is this happening in our so-called democratic nation of free press, where we're law-abiding, where we have moral superiority? Is it just me, or is the Western world or the global north losing its mind and moral compass? Or has it always lost its mind and moral compass when it so chooses? It is so clear how it's happening.
I guess I disagree with you on your question, because anytime I hear people talk about the atrocity against humanity, especially against like specifically targeted groups, I think it's a privilege that you haven't had to deal with it prior to now. And I think like we've always been exactly like this. And to your point, exactly what was demonstrated in you using your platform, what has changed in this world is not how heinous and disgusting people are, and not the fact that people misname genocide as something else or a disagreement. It's the fact that, like, you can't actually unsee it literally, because you're watching it, whether it's TikTok or Facebook or WhatsApp or X or literally just phone grabs. You can go on Substack, Medium, pick your poison.
The scale of the devastation, there have never been in recent modern times so many people killed in such a small amount of time, so many people deliberately, strategically starved. And so that is unprecedented. Our unprecedented access to seeing it is also what has, I think, galvanized people. Yeah. And the great Indian writer Arundhati Roy wrote, "The trouble is that once you see it, you can't unsee it. Mm-hmm. And once you've seen it, keeping quiet, saying nothing becomes as political an act as speaking out. There's no innocence. Either way, you're accountable."
For sure.
So I feel, though I have no choice but to speak out. It's just what I would always do.
For sure.
But there's so much reticence and fear of speaking out. And you say, you know, like, you're still going.
Yeah.
I do so knowing full well that there are a lot of people who are going to do their damnest to try and silence me and this conversation. And God knows, even maybe try and shut this podcast down.
100%. But the thing about it is, Antoinette, that, you know, and I have said it to you before, you have a conscious decision to either stand up for what you believe is right or sit down and be complacent with everybody else. You made a decision about that. I love and live and daydream about the moment where we don't have to call ourselves social activists anymore, because everyone knows that activism is a part of being a human. It is It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's some like wild act of rebellion.
100%.
To be like, hey, media, do your job appropriately.
Sure.
Report without bias and intimidation.
Yeah.
Humanize Arabs in the way you humanize Israelis.
And
when did this become radical? Like that is how do we recover from seeing this? So many people now see it for what it is, or is it important that we don't ever recover from this?
The recovery would suggest that everyone then became complicit and complacent. That's one side of recovery. The other one is that you actually dismantle supremacy, which you cannot do. I would fight anybody to the death to go head to head, vernacular and syntax and every site you can possibly find. It will not occur. It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous to see a thing that is inhumane happen to a human being and you, the spectator, say, "That's wrong." Mm. And all of a sudden you're an oracle?
Yeah.
You're not a fucking oracle. You should be outraged. If you're not outraged, you're part of the problem. I am not suggesting that everyone is going to have the same viewpoint, the same what they consider to be a resolution, but the concept that we...
Well, I'm going to disagree there. There is only one sustainable resolution. Israel cannot be safe and free until Palestinians are safe and free. And so if you want to stamp out terrorism, if you want to eradicate Hamas, you need Palestinians to have liberties and freedom and self-determination and respect. All you're doing is engaging the future generations of Hamas or whatever other resistant, militant, violent group.
Sure.
And so there is a solution, and the solution is not violence.
Mm.
And so what you may have more sympathies with Israel. Some people say, oh, because October 7 happened and they started and all those poor people at the music festival. Yeah, absolutely poor people at the music festival. This didn't start on October 7.
Yeah.
And the West's involvement and upholding of these incredibly unequal societies is never going to end well and resolve with violence, and if we keep things the way they are.
I don't know what is going to stop this. My question for you is, do you believe that the attention, the spin, the way that the rhetoric is being told, influencing such a backlash?
The opinion of the people is very much different to institutions of power and the decisions that they are making and the messages that they are trying to send.
Yep.
And so when people are looking, more people than ever before are turning to Al Jazeera for information.
Sure.
They're going to Palestinians on the ground to actually get news that they believe. And I think that should raise alarm bells, because Al Jazeera, while it's doing some good work in the coverage of Gaza, is a Qatari-owned private media outlet,
yeah.
which there are a bunch of red flags to be concerned about there. When people aren't looking at the public broadcasters like the BBC and ABC with as much trust because they don't feel they're getting unfettered views or views that aren't influenced by the lobby,
yeah.
The pro-Israel lobby,
yeah.
then that becomes a problem. So there's this now, there's even a greater distrust of the institution of the media and also seeing the treatment of me by the ABC has made a lot of people go, she shared a Human Rights Watch post. Like
yeah.
if that is not kosher, if that's not cool, where are we at in 2024?
Sure.
Also, politicians, you know, despite the protests, despite public opinion polls, despite the petition upon petition that people want a ceasefire, they want the violence to end, the US is still sending bombs that are being dropped while aid is being dropped.
Yeah.
And so I think there is this real disconnect with what regular people want and what those in power are doing. And even though since our Prime Minister, like Canada and New Zealand, has like calling for a humanitarian ceasefire or a pause, please, guys, please stop. It would be really lovely if you stop, please. Okay, we love you still. You know, that's kind of the tone in which not outright condemnation, not applying economic sanctions, not penalising any Australian who's serving with the IDF saying they can't return. There are so many stronger ways in which we could say we don't approve. And I think the Australian, broader Australian public is calling bullshit.
I think you raised some interesting issues. I think that the lack of education around what is actually happening versus what is being thrown and spun and reported on, and I say yeah. report in air quotes because these days we don't know where the information is coming from, the amongst and directly juxtaposed to this heinous amount of violence that we are all witnessing real time is the fact that, like, you just 100% don't believe any of the stuff.
No.
That you're being fed, told. Like, you actually just don't know, which is inciting even more violence.
People talk about the rapid increase in anti-Semitism. It has rapidly increased. Yeah. Anti-Semitism was on the rise before October 7th, actually from neo-Nazi, far-right, yeah. white supremacy groups, you know, yeah. which I had talked about and warned about and was yes. concerned about.
Of course.
This anti-Semitism that is happening, rightly or wrongly, much of it, I think, can be attributed to what the Israeli government is doing,
sure.
making Jews in the diaspora unsafe, which is unfair because you can't hold an yeah. individual
yeah.
who has the same ancestry
right.
to a right-wing psychotic leader, that
right.
is Benjamin Netanyahu. He has on yeah. his head of security yeah. is a former terrorist,
yeah,
someone
sure.
who was charged and sure. went to jail for terrorism.
Sure, sure.
That is who is
yeah.
calling the shots.
Yeah. There is a massive dissent and disparity. I think the way that you put that was very well said and put together, that what is being carried out here from whatever you call leadership, powers that be, money that makes it, is not the will of the civilians.
No.
That is not the will of the people. And I mean, but that issue I feel like is rampant in the U.S. I feel like that is a constant state of complete fuckery.
And Biden's realizing it's not working well with the polls for his presidential re-election. But I don't know if a Republican government was in power, if we had a conservative government power here, that it would be any different.
No,
that their alliance would be any different.
Yeah, it's not. But what is clear is the amount of violence. What is clear is how long it has been going on. Mm. And what is the most abhorrent and the most clear is how justified it is.
Oh,
that's
and
the
that's
heartbreak.
The thing.
That's the point.
The right to defend itself.
Yeah,
and all of the,
gross.
You know, and it's like, oh, well, we can hit hospitals because of this. And they're just the excuses and the gaslighting. And I think the public aren't stupid. I mean, maybe for the first couple of weeks they bought it because October 7 was heinous. And people are like, oh, I get it. You've got to get hostages back. You've got to defend yourself. You've got to. And then very quickly it became, this is disproportionate. This is probably more about annexing land in the West Bank than it is about ever getting those hostages back. And there's so much vicarious trauma. There are so many people who can't look away, won't look away, who have otherwise had no connection to Gaza or Palestinians, but are so traumatized by what they've seen.
I often feel that we have been given some of the most horrendous occurrences in recent times in our generation with no actual parameters, structure, knowledge, or fortitude to get through it, to resolve it, to even remotely understand it. If it doesn't break your heart and take your breath away, see somebody. if it doesn't stop you in your tracks, if it doesn't 100%.
But it does. And my point is, though, it does stop people in their tracks and break people's heart. And that's why I wonder if we can ever be the same after this. Another area in which I don't think we'll be viewed the same again is international law, because Israel's genocidal rampage in Gaza, I think, has also exposed the double standards of the West with regards to human rights and international law. Yeah. There's no turning back. We've only got the West's arrogance to blame. I think even the enforcement of international law with the UN Security Council, with its veto rights for five countries that happened to be on the winning side of 1945, has time and time again proved that it's incapable of fulfilling its mandate. And then there's the International Criminal Court. If it was functioning effectively, Israeli leaders would be on trial as we speak. There would have been no need for South Africa to approach the ICJ. And I think no matter what it concludes, South Africa's lawsuit in the International Court of Justice, arguing that Israel has violated the Genocide Convention, it's going to go down in history. It'll be remembered as the first step towards finally holding a rogue state accountable.
I have to just pause you because I have a hard time talking about South Africa's case with apartheid. I know we're not talking, but this shit is not new. It wasn't October 7th. And and when you think about South Africa and apartheid and you think about that and they're coming in and being like, yo, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, that's a flag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a flag,
but there are
kids.
So many red flags. What is different, as you said, throughout civilizations, we have done unspeakable things in the name of religion, really for wealth
for
and
whatever.
Land and
yes.
for whatever, for power.
Yeah.
We have done this in the most brutal ways. What is different? It's the so-called civilized world that is doing it.
Yes.
It is doing it under our watch.
Yes.
Why it is live streamed. We are being lied to. We are being gaslit. We are being bullied.
Yeah.
And they're... For the first time, I think, and something has really flipped and really changed. And Palestinians I speak to say this. I mean, and Israelis I speak to say this. Something is shifting. People aren't buying the spin anymore. They're not buying the lies.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only reason I raise, will we ever recover? Should we ever recover? Because something is different this time around. The masses are doing their best in whatever way they can to voice their disapproval, whether it's on social media, it's on the streets, it's petitions, it's letters, the polls. Every indicator is that people want this to stop. They see it for what it is. It is wrong. And yet our leaders, the power brokers in whatever institutions, militarily, politically, in the media, don't want a bar of it. And I think that that is going to increase this rift between the people in these legacy institutions, and maybe rightly so.
I think whilst we disagree on many things, people are tired. People are tired, and there are people who should be here and children that should be here that aren't here. And no matter how you look at this, no matter where you fall, legacy, diaspora, or otherwise, there is a problem when we as a global society cannot see that this has to stop, full stop.
Well, we can see it. It's just we're being ignored.
Yes.
And gaslit
but
bullied.
But we would suggest that we are then all seen in one constituency, and we're not. There's the powers that be, that little iceberg of folks that are actually at the top doing the things and pulling the strings. And then there's the rest of us.
What I do think is shifting, though, I think the power dynamics are shifting. The amount of public support nationally and internationally I have because I stood up to the ABC and because I stood up to the pro-Israel lobby.
Yeah.
And these are from all quarters.
Yeah.
Like people who were donating to my legal fees,
guys
called Graham Smith from regional New South Wales.
Right.
People stopping me, international students stopping me in the street. This is not just, it's not just the traditional tribalism of people going, I'm Arab or I'm Muslim or whatever. And this is
100%.
No, these are people who are angry with institutions.
Yeah. I will
that
say
is
that,
different
that is that is new. That
once,
is new.
Once upon a time, somebody in my situation would have been bullied, dragged through the mud by tabloid press, which they have tried to do.
Right, sure.
Silenced, quivering in a corner, probably never to reemerge again.
Yeah, 100%.
And so that, even though it's so hard, is in some way galvanizing.
I mean, I normally am ready to shoot that narrative and that conversation down, but people are noticing, even though it doesn't, quote, affect them, or it's not about something specific.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that the really interesting thing is that the different sorts of people that this has brought in for one cause, it's those who, care about human rights.
Sure.
It's those who are anti-violence. It's also those who care about freedom of expression and opinion. So you've got traditionally conservative thinkers who are like, we need freedom of speech. You've got diehard public broadcasting fans who are like, we need an independent and robust media to tell us what is actually happening, to hold governments to account. So it's kind of bringing in all these different people who are unlikely bedfellows,
and,
which I think is...
And I'm here for it. But you know where I'm at with this. Like, people love a swell. They love a groundswell. Yes. They love to get out and do a thing and be on the right side or whatever. And then what do they do, Antoinette? What they always do, leave. Find something else to do. This is too hard. It's too hectic. Yes, well, I know, but I can't.
I know you're referring to Black Lives Matter.
I'm referring to all of it. I'm talking women. I'm talking gender pay gap. I'm talking, look at the beautiful way that the Matildas brought this country together. And then Sam Kerr's on trial, like, for some nonsense.
I know.
Look at it. People love a rally.
I know.
God, they love a march. They love a fucking march. We need more people, Antoinette, to stay. This can't be a life cycle.
Well, that's what I guess that's the point of this whole discussion. Will the world just recover and move on? Will it be the same again? I mean, I hope it's not.
I think.
And I hope it's not just me.
I want to be with you. I want to be with you on the, like, things are shifting. We are not good at staying.
At the beginning of this, I talked about having to look away for my own mental health. And that's not a cop-out.
Absolutely
not. Because I
think
practicing self-compassion, setting boundaries with news consumption, selecting reputable sources to stay informed, you know, and limiting exposure to graphic content. We are not meant to see that many maimed or dead or dying and starving children. Like, that's just, that is not good for anybody. Seeking professional help. That's something that I've definitely had to do to get through this. And finding joy and positive actions, because you can feel the misery and feel empathetic and want things to change, but drowning in it, I'm just not sure does anything, you know, is good for you or for anyone.
What can you do to stay? I love assembly. I love that, you know, Martin Luther King said a riot is the voice of the people unheard. I don't believe that he meant that semantically in a way that you go and you destroy things. I assume that he meant to gather together, to talk about a way forward, to figure out conversation points and make sure in those conversation points that you can educate without bias. Remembering to vote, remembering to get involved, remembering to maybe get behind spaces that could affect policy and make actual changes.
And I think it's important that you also never accept that this just happens. This is the way the world always is, because I just think nothing would change if the media was always impressionable, it's always been lobby, or whatever it is, or people have always been violent. I just think that attitude has never
changed anything. But I think it's important for you and anyone else that takes offense to that ideology to remember that people are also exhausted. People are also tired. But after acknowledgement is action. And action means that you're showing up. Action means that you're not allowing monoliths to exist. Action means that you're educating yourself and talking with people and finding ways to get involved and get invested. And that doesn't necessarily always have to be an outward space. Maybe that's something that you are doing in your home. Maybe that's a space that you're trying to move conversations forward in a way that also keeps you safe as well.
Isn't it wild that we have to worry about how safe we are just to talk about Gaza and to show concern about how we ever recover from this. I've never known anything else. To broach this, to have this discussion.
This is the world. This is 100% where we are. And of course, you as a person that is oppressed and is marginalized needs to worry about your safety. Wake up, Ma. When have you ever been safe?
But it's just.
And it's devastating. It fucking sucks. It sucks because it is about that. You're the one that's being harmed and targeted, and you've got to worry about, did you get home all right? Are you okay?
Yeah, about I don't go out in public by myself.
100%. Do I text and check on you? Do you do the same with me? Yes, of course. That is where we are. It was where we were before October 7th as well. It's more important even now. It's more important even now to acknowledge that that is true, and also to figure out what we are going to do to not only remain, but to go forward. And I don't have any answers for you. That doesn't fit in this pot.
I wish I had the answers. All I know is I will never be the same again after witnessing these intentional, deliberate, widespread annihilation of an oppressed people with the rubber stamp of approval from our leaders and with the gaslighting from our leaders and the bullying and the deliberate omissions from sections of the media. I don't want to be the same.
We want to always encourage all of you to understand that, like, standing up always has a cost.
Mm.
Speaking your truth always is very, very expensive. And history has shown that it has been wildly unfair in many, many spaces for many, many years. It is still always time. It is still always time to do what is right. It is still always time to care about how people are treated. Every person.
Usually, if I was feeling myself, I would have made fun of you.
I know.
For that little sermon.
Yeah.
And the tone.
You would have.
But I'm a little broken. I know this was a really heavy episode. If it's been triggering for you, we get it. We're feeling it. There is Lifeline Australia on 13, 11, 14. Be kind to each other and to yourself. We are the Antoinettes. We'll be back next Thursday. And until then, we'd love for you to give us a review, give us a rating, head over to our Facebook group, The Antoinettes. Tell us what you'd love us to talk about. Please be kind to yourself and to each other.
You guys stay safe. We'll see you soon.